Welcome. This is Craig Valentine. Welcome. They changed the way that the teleseminar system looks, so I couldn't tell if we were recording or not. Well, welcome to the May Mic, this monthly implementation call. I'm very excited about this one because it's one of my favorite topics, which is delivery. And you're going to pick up 7 tools that you can use to go beyond giving a speech to creating an experience for your audience. And this should be very, very interactive today, so I'm looking forward to having you speak up. I always know this. If you want to master speaking, you need to master structure, content, and delivery. And whenever I coach somebody, I can tell very quickly whether the structure, content, or delivery needs the most work. And usually it's at least 2 of them that need a lot of work. And you know what? Delivery is almost always one of them. Why? Because people don't work on delivery as much as they work on sitting down and writing and out and outlining their speeches. I'll give you an example. I've had people over the years send me speeches, and they will send them in text, you know, or piece of paper. And in the margin, they'll say something like, "This is where I plan to smile." And I'm like, do you really need to put that in there? It's important to remember from, and I remember this from Dale Carnegie, that if you're under the influence of your own emotions in your story, you'll automatically have the right gestures. You'll automatically have the right facial expressions. You'll automatically have the right body language, the right energy. In other words, they wouldn't have to write down smile. It would automatically come. It's automatic. And I see too many speakers right now forcing it. And believe me, they're not alone. I used to force it too. I used to think, well, I have to put this gesture here or this smile there or use this body. I'll be honest with you. I never think about gestures or expressions when I'm on stage. All that should happen in rehearsal, and then you should just let it come naturally based on the story. So here are 2 thoughts before we even get into 7 mistakes that speakers make with their delivery and the tools to go against these mistakes. 2 thoughts I have when it comes to delivery are subtlety and silence. Subtlety and silence. Almost everything you do delivery-wise on stage, I believe, should be subtle. For example, people understand that there's a timeline on the stage, right? And sometimes people say, well, fast forward 7 years. And they walk from the audience's left to the audience's right, as they should. But some people walk all the way across the stage. And that's not necessary. You know, 7 years can be 2 steps. It can be much more subtle than that. So it's about subtlety, but it's also about silence. We need to use more silence when we're in delivery. And I want you to think about this. One key to speaking is to tease them before you tell them. Well, what do you think is one of the best teases? Silence. Silence. So we need to have more of that. We need to be subtle, and we need to be silent. And right before we get into the 7 mistakes, here's something else. People say to me a lot of times, "Craig, you're a natural." And I'll say to them, "You don't see my rehearsals." See, we need to practice way more than you play. And that's something I learned when I played college basketball. We had way more practices than we had games. We should practice many more times than you actually present to an audience. And my motto is, when you rehearse hard, you present easy. When you rehearse hard, you present easy. My naturalness is on the far side of preparation, not the near side. And I think too many speakers say, well, he's natural. I can get up there and just wing it. No. There's no winging it here. It's on the far side of preparation, not on the near side. All right, so here's what we're going to do today. You're going to pick up 7 mistakes that many speakers make with their delivery, and then together we'll figure out what are some solutions. And I want you to be very honest with yourself for whether or not you're making this mistake or not. And again, I'm sure that I've made all of them, and probably still make some today. And I'm hoping that this can be by far the most interactive mic, monthly implementation call that we have, so hopefully you'll be willing to speak up on this. The way you speak up is you hit *2, and that gets you to raise your hand, and then I can call on you. All right, let's get into #1. One of the biggest mistakes that speakers make, and I see this all over the place, and it's definitely a mistake that I used to make. In fact, I remember speaking to an organization in their conference 1 year, and it was very, very early on in my career, and I rocked it. I thought, oh, man, I just hit hit a home run. This is fantastic. I hit every note. I did everything I wanted to do on stage. I'm so excited about this. Now, this is back when they had VHS tapes. I don't know if you remember those. But they gave me one, a copy of it. And I went home, and I watched it, and I was awful. I was absolutely awful. I was terrible. I mean, it was just, it was, and they say, well, why? Why was it bad? Well, because I could have given the speech without the audience even being there. It was a monologue. It was not a dialogue. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that I see speakers make with their delivery. So number one is giving a monologue rather than a dialogue. I was horrified when I watched that. So what we have to understand is that our audience wants to be heard too. They want to laugh. They want to yell out. You're going to hear them say things like, uh-huh, mm-hmm, and all of that. They're going to. So it's important to let them be heard. So do me a favor and raise your hand to let me know ways that you can make it a dialogue with your audience rather than just a monologue. Feel free to hit star two. How can you make it a dialogue with your audience rather than just a monologue? Hit star two if you're willing to speak up. And if not, I'll just keep on speaking. Hit star two if you have a solution to this. All right, let me go with Skip. Skip, what are some thoughts that you have on making it a monologue rather than a dialogue? And then I'll go to Rebecca. Skip?
Ask reflection questions.
Okay, good. So if you ask a reflection question, what do you do after they answer it?
What do you do after they answer it?
If you actually ask a question and they answer it out loud,
right?
You know, what do you do?
I guess one thing I would do is ask them maybe a follow-up question for them specifically.
So okay.
Like you're doing like right now. to draw them out a little bit more, engage them even more.
Okay, and that's completely fine based on how much time you have and how much time
right.
you want to spend with one person.
Right.
I think the most important thing that you alluded to there is you at least acknowledge
right.
their response.
Right.
I see too many speakers on stage, they'll ask a question, somebody will give an answer, and then they'll just go on.
And sometimes you have to repeat it anyway because the rest of the audience may not have heard it too.
That's exactly right, and that acknowledges it as well. But
right.
even if you don't even say anything, but you just acknowledge it with a head nod or something like that, they have to know that they're being heard,
right.
and there are several ways to do that. Thank you, Skip. I appreciate that. Okay. Rebecca, any thoughts?
Yes. For me, it's you could use your internal dialogue. It was as if I were thinking or you might be thinking, or you could also use it as a projection as if it were they were saying – how do I explain this? It would be
I understand. So you're saying almost project what they're thinking onto them.
Right. You might be, you know, what I just told you might make you think this is what's happening.
Good. So you're getting into their thoughts. So it can be, you might even say something like, okay. I see. You're looking at me as if to say, boom. Right.
Yeah.
And that acknowledges them as well and what they might be thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a dialogue because, believe it or not, even if they don't answer you, if you ask a question or you say something and then you tap into what's going on in their mind, that's going to feel like a dialogue to them. So I really like that answer. And that's something that we talked about on the first mic, the first monthly implementation call a couple months ago. Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, good. So here are some thoughts I have on giving a monologue. You want to pause even for the rhetorical questions that you ask. You want to give them enough time based on the depth of the question, and we'll talk about how to figure out how much time a little bit later on. You want to acknowledge their answers and their actions. You want to let them know that you see them. And you definitely want to open it up for those wonderful, spontaneous moments that can happen when you're speaking because those can strengthen your connection. And you want to give them time to laugh and time to think. And you want to encourage them to speak up while you speak. And one of the ways to encourage them is by your actions. If they know that when you speak up, or when they speak up, like they did in Boston and in L.A. the last couple of weeks for me, that if they speak up, you're not going to lose your place, that you're fine with it, that you're encouraging them, they'll keep on speaking up. All right. Now, here's an example. I'm going to play an audio clip of me this past weekend in Los Angeles. And you can see how I made this a dialogue by acknowledging some of their responses, even their laughter. I even acknowledge their laughter. So see if you can pick out where I did this. All right, here we go.
Never stop asking questions. So I got a question for you. Why did you clap for me? Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. But you know what? Some people don't like me. You know why? Because I joined Toastmasters in March of 1998. Got my CTM in March of 1999 and won the World Championship in August of 1999 in my very first try. Wait, now you clap, but can you feel the haters in the room? Right? Because people come up to me all the time. They say, Craig, you don't even know what it feels like to lose a contest. Yes, I do. See, I lost a humorous speech contest at the club level. Thank you for laughing at my misery. And I'll never forget a seasoned Toastmaster named Alan Mish came up to me afterwards. And he said, Craig, you can win the World Championship of Public Speaking. I said, what are you talking about? I just lost the humorous speech contest at the club level. He said, that's okay. He said, the only thing wrong with your humorous speech was that it wasn't funny. You ever given a speech you wish you could take back? Yeah. I promise you that will happen much less often after today.
All right. Welcome back. So you can see what I acknowledged. I acknowledged their clapping at the beginning. And I said, yeah, you clap, but can you feel the haters in the room? And then I acknowledged the laughter that some people had when I said that I lost at the club level. And then I even looked at one lady and said something like, thank you for laughing at my misery. And I like to do that a lot. I like to see what people are looking like. What are their expressions? What are they saying? Are they laughing? And then tap into that, and then you can really have a true dialogue and make a great connection with your audience. So number one is the mistake is giving a dialogue, giving a monologue, and the solution is giving a dialogue. And then we heard lots of ways to do that from Skip and from Rebecca and from myself. And number two, the second mistake is preaching. Preaching. There are speakers that get up there and they preach and they say, you got to do this and you got to do that and you must do this and you have to do that. Do you have any ideas on how we can avoid preaching? Go ahead and hit star two if you have an idea on how we can avoid preaching from the stage. And I'll give you my thoughts as well, but hit star two if you have one. Okay, I'm going to go with Will. Will Reed, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, thanks.
Yeah,
one way you can avoid preaching is to share your mistakes and your failures.
Aha. And what does that do for the audience?
Well, it makes them identify with you because, you know, you're just like them. You're not special.
Yes. Right. And so instead of being special, we come off as similar. And when you're similar, then people aren't going to think that you're preaching at them. Like, I'm standing above you with a tablet and saying, you have to do this, you have to do that, you got to take this step. And I fell off the encyclopedia truck with all life's answers, so listen to me. And yeah.
And maybe your tablet is an iPad these days.
It could be. So I always say, share your failures, your flaws, your frustrations, and your firsts. You know, because chances are the first, whatever your first time doing something was, you probably weren't very good at it. So share your failures, your frustrations, your flaws, and your firsts. Good. That's definitely one way. Thank you, Will. So what's another way to avoid preaching? Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Who's this?
That's Gina. So not to my West Michigan roots. I'm actually in San Diego, Craig.
I know that. Okay, hi, Gina.
I didn't mean to rub that in, sorry. okay, I think another way to escape the preaching trap is to show the benefits for them of following your advice, which then puts it more on the level of encouragement and inspiration instead of, you know, thou shalt.
Right. Here's what's in it for you to do this. But it's not.
Right, or the reason I'm telling you this is because I want to see you confident. I want to see you hitting it out of the park, that kind of thing.
Right. So then it's a soft you rather than a hard you. Those hard yous are like, you got to do this and you have to do. But a soft you is like, well, how would you like to get this? How would you like to receive this? You know, and then you kind of lead them rather than push them. That's great. Love it. Love those pieces of advice. And I think for me, the best way to avoid preaching is to let your story do the work. Let your story do the work. If you're telling a story in the right way, if you're sharing a story in the right way, by the time you get to the change and the carry-out message of your story, they should be way sold in terms of being across that bridge, whatever action or step you want them to take. So let the stories do the work. I remember I saw a speech coach named Ron Arden, a legendary speech coach, and he said when you're going from your story to your message, in your mind what you should be thinking is, but seriously, this is what I came to tell you. Now, if you use that internal dialogue before you go into driving your message home, then you're not going to preach. You're just going to be conversational and let them know, like Gina said, the results of taking this step or the results of heeding this message or this story. So let your stories do the work. Too many speakers, they'll tell their story, and then the story will be over, and then they'll go on for another 2 or 3 minutes trying to make their point. If you told your story in the right way, the story already made the point. It's over. Let's get to the next thing. So to avoid preaching, definitely tell your story. And like Will said, be similar rather than special. And then follow Gina's advice as well. All right, so that's number two is the preaching, and you saw some solutions to that. Number three, the third mistake that a lot of speakers make, and you've probably seen it, is moving without a purpose. Just moving back and forth on the stage or back and forth or up and back or just pacing a lot of times, moving without a purpose. So what are some of the solutions to that, to moving without a purpose? What are some reasons for moving, I should say? So give me some thoughts on that. Hit star 2 if you have some thoughts on reasons to move on stage. Go ahead and hit star 2. All right. Okay, and matter of fact, let me do this. I'm going to play a story. And in the story, you'll see that the solution to moving without a purpose is this. An action in your story is going to prompt your movement on stage. The action in your story is going to prompt your movement on stage. So listen to this quick story. It's about 2 minutes, and then we'll see how we can move on stage to make this story the most effective. All right, here we go.
1997, I'm flying back from Los Angeles to Baltimore. It's a 5-hour flight. I sit down on a flight, guy sits down next to me. And I remember thinking, hey, this guy looks kind of like me, just a slightly older version. Wonder what he does in life. Now, if you fly a lot, you'll appreciate this. The first 4.5 hours of the flight, what do you think we do? Say absolutely nothing to each other. After about a half hour left of the flight, he turns to me and he says, how you doing? I said, I'm fine. You know, I've actually been here the whole time. He said, I'm sorry I didn't talk to you earlier, but I didn't want to talk to you and find out you were boring and then be stuck talking to a boring person for 5 hours. And oddly, I understood because I'm kind of the same way. But how do people try to start a conversation with you on a flight? What are some of the things they say? What do you do? Where are you from?
Where are you going?
Now, the where you're going, like, hopefully we're going to the same place. Drop me off over Redondo. I just...
I like it, too.
He didn't say any of that. In fact, it felt like he was looking through me. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, well, right now I'm an events planner. Eventually, I'd like to be a professional speaker. I said, why? What do you do? He said, I'm a professional speaker. I said, you are? He said, yes. As a matter of fact, I am the number one gospel comedian in the United States of America. I said, man, I didn't even know there was such a thing as a gospel comedian. He said, that's why I'm number one.
All right, welcome back. I always like telling that story. Listen, there are some things that we can do to make that story more effective while I'm on stage, while I'm in the story. And here are some, and then I'll be interested in some of your thoughts as well. But think about this for a second. I have to figure out where that gentleman is in my story. Where is he on stage? So what I do is I envision us being back on that plane where we were. He was sitting to the right of me. right? So every time I speak to him, where do I turn my head? I turn my head to my right to look at the spot of where he would be. Every time he speaks to me, I turn my head back to my left to look at the spot of where I would be. And that never changes throughout the entire story. Now, why does that never change? Why do I always look to the right when I'm speaking to him, and I always look to the left when he's speaking to me? Because we never change seats on the plane. That's why it never changes. We sat in the same seat on the plane the entire 5 hours. So you got to make sure you know where you put everybody and everything on your stage and really stage that out. And also, in this story, would it be effective for me to be pacing back and forth on the flight? No, because I didn't pace back and forth on the flight. So I shouldn't pace back and forth on stage. We were seated on the plane pretty much the entire time. We weren't walking back and forth on the plane. So I see a lot of speakers nowadays, they're in the middle of their story and they're using dialogue, but they're looking straight out into the audience. Well, that's fine every now and then if your audience members are one of your characters. But for the most part, when you're in your story, one character should be looking at the other character, and then that other character should get the line of dialogue and react and look back at the first character. And then when you get into the conversation with your audience, you can look back out at them. All right? So think about some of the reasons for moving on stage. The action in your story prompts the movement on stage. All right? So anybody else have a thought on that? And feel free to hit star 2 if you have a thought on what are some reasons for moving on stage. Star 2. I see that Will and Gina already raised their hand, but I think they're raising their hand from the last question. All right. Okay, let's move on to the next one then, which is number 4. And this is a mistake that a lot of speakers make, which is stepping on thoughts and laughs. Now, chances are, if you're at this level and you're in my academy, chances are you know about stepping on laughter and that you should not step on laughter. Meaning, when your audience is laughing, you shouldn't just keep talking over it. But still, even at this level, there are a lot of speakers who don't realize that we do the same thing with thoughts. Like when we make a profound statement, we need to let that sink in as well and not step on it. All right? So what can we do? What are some solutions to not stepping on the thoughts and stepping on the laughs? Let me see. I know, Will, I think you have your hand up still, so maybe you have an answer to this. Will, you have any thoughts on how to not step on the laughters and the thoughts?
Well, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Well, I would say wait it out. You know, just let them laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Let them laugh and let them think. And let them think. And one of the things, Will, I know you know this because you're a certified coach and you wrote World Class Speaking Japan and so forth. But it's very important to overemphasize whatever you need to work on in rehearsal. Overemphasize whatever you need to work on in rehearsal. So whenever you even think you've made a profound statement while you're rehearsing, just pause. Pause for a ridiculously long amount of time so that it sinks in. And then when you get on stage, you'll find that happy medium, and you won't, you know, you obviously won't pause too long, but you'll pause long enough for it to sink in. So overemphasize whatever you need to work on in rehearsal. And you definitely need to give them time to pause, time to laugh, and time to think. Definitely time to think. All right? So overemphasize it in rehearsal. Now, here's something else you can do to make every speech better than the speech you gave before. I always say what gets recorded gets rewarded, right? So record your speech, just like I did with the Los Angeles speech that you've been listening to pieces of recently. Record it and then listen back for the uh-huhs and the ahas and the mms and those type of things that the audience members say. Because that's going to tell you what hit home. And that's going to tell you the next time you get on stage, you're going to have to pause there even more, even longer. Okay, what gets recorded gets rewarded. Record your speeches and listen back to them. So that's the mistake for number 4 is stepping on thoughts and laughs. And the key is to pause, and the key is to overemphasize it in rehearsal, and the key is to record it so that you can see where to pause in the future. All right, number 5, a mistake is speaking to the entire group. It drives me crazy when speakers are up there and they keep saying things like folks and friends and ladies and gentlemen. It's like those are almost becoming filler words or filler statements. I used to do it. Back in the day, I used to almost every couple seconds, sentences, I would say, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand this. And ladies and gentlemen, you have to why? Because the people I used to watch used to do that. But times have changed. We need a more intimate relationship with our audience, and you need to do what I call speak to one and look to all. Now, here's a reminder for you. If you've heard this before, fine, but I think it's important to pick this up. So I'm going to actually play a three-minute clip of me in Los Angeles last week teaching them this very, very important delivery principle. So bear with me. It's 3 minutes, and we'll come back and debrief right afterwards. Here we go.
All right, Kenny, nice to meet you. I want you to look out in this audience, and I want you to pretend it's your audience, and I want you to find out how many of them have ever been to Baltimore. So what would you do? What would you say? All right. Don't say all right. Okay.
Thank you, Chris. Hello, Toastmasters. Welcome to the who here has been to Baltimore? Good, good, good. So you'll know that they call it actually Baltimore, right?
Who calls it Baltimore? All right, very good. Give him a hand. You see how I had to stop him before he went into his own keynote speech. That was very good. It was very wrong. So let's just... No, it was good. It was good. But how would you like a tool that you can use to make a deeper connection with your audience than you've ever felt before? If so, just say yes.
Yes!
All right. Then this is a slight edge principle, which means it's a slight change in the way you do something, but if you do it throughout your entire speech,
okay,
what a difference in how they'll feel it. Not just hear it, but feel your message.
Okay.
Okay, so Kenny, when your audience members leave your speech,
yeah,
hopefully at the end,
yeah,
do you want them to leave thinking, whoa, it really felt like I was part of a group? Or do you want them to leave thinking, whoa, it really felt like Kenny was speaking directly to me? What do you want, A or B?
B.
How many people did Kenny just speak to? Everybody. How many people should he speak to?
B.
One. Somebody said B. So how can Kenny rephrase his question to make it sound and feel grammatically like he's speaking to one rather than 260? Yeah, have you been to Baltimore? Can you imagine, should you, would you, could you, singular grammatically? Stay up here, Ken. Write this down because it will change your public speaking life. Speak to one, but look to all. Speak to one, but look to all. We have far too many speakers speaking to far too many people far too often. And you'll hear them. They'll say things like, ladies and gentlemen, and friends, and folks, and boys and girls, and societal members, and fellow Toastmasters. You might as well be saying, friends, Romans, stop it. Speak to one. Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever heard a speaker say, now some of you might be thinking.
Yes.
Guess what? There's no some of you. They're not thinking. There's no some of you. You ever heard a speaker say, now many of you probably came to the conclusion. Mm-hmm. Guess what? There's no many of you.
Yeah.
Now, in case you've come to the conclusion, always make it sound like you're speaking to one grammatically.
That's exactly right. Always make it sound like you're speaking to one grammatically. And what I like to use as a hallway test, and what I call it the hallway test, and it would work like this. Like if I was walking by one person in the hallway, if I could say it to him or her, I can take it up on stage. So let's say I'm back in Japan, and like I was with Will, and let's say Will and I are walking by each other in the hallway. Would I walk by Will and say, how many of you have ever been to Baltimore? Of course not. I would look at him as an individual and I would say, have you ever been to Baltimore? So if you think about using the hallway test, that can be the gauge of whether or not you can take something up on stage. But the real thing is just you need to make it sound like you're speaking to one individual. I can remember speaking to the University of Phoenix graduation ceremony. There were 4,000 people in the audience, and somebody sent me a Facebook message maybe a couple days later, and he was just somebody in the audience. He said, listen, I know there were a lot of people in your audience, but it felt like you were speaking directly to me. And that's not because of me. That's because of this tool of speak to one, look to all. Now, just a caveat, Make sure when you do say, raise your hand if you've ever been to Baltimore, make sure you look at everybody. Don't just look at one person. I see some people just speak to one, look to one. No, it's going to take you a long time to get through your audience. So speak to one, look to all. Very, very important. And you'll feel a much deeper connection with your audience than you ever have before. All right, so that's number five. The mistake is speaking to the entire group. The solution is to speak to one, look to all. The technique you can use is the hallway test to be the barometer of whether or not you can take something on stage. All right, let's look at number six. And by the way, the last one, the last mistake is going to blow you away. You probably won't even have heard of that before. Tease, tease, tease. Okay, so number six is not matching the audience. Not matching the audience. Let's say that you have an audience like I did. I think it was the last speech I gave in 2016. I was speaking to this education group, and there were 750 people in the audience. And I was sitting in the back with some people from Texas and some other people. This happened to be in Baltimore, or Baltimore, as the guy was saying. And as I'm in the audience watching the people who are about to introduce me, I realized these are 750 of the quietest people I've ever heard in my life or did not hear. So when I got up on stage, I can't come out as a motivational speaker to a very laid-back audience and say, hey, I'm Craig Valentine. It's great to be here. I can't wait to get started. Are you ready? Let's go. Are you motivated? Can't do that. Can't do that. What we need to be able to do is match our audience's energy and then move them to where we want them to be. Sometimes it might take a little while. But I can tell you this. I came out, and the first thing I said to that audience was, I was afraid to come here. Not because of you, but because several years ago, I was traveling so much that my daughter wrote me a note. This and that. So I met them on that level of being laid back. I connected with them with some laughter, with some stories, and I would say probably 10 to 15 minutes into my speech, they were wilder than any audience that I ever had all year long. So it's important to match your audience's energy where they are and then move them to where you want them to be. Now, how do you know what their energy is? Well, chances are if you sit there and there's anybody speaking before you, you can feel it. Chances are you can feel it when people are giving you your introduction. And that's why I always like to put something in my introduction to see, to help me see, is this audience one that laughs? What's the energy like in the audience? For example, I think in my introduction, there's a part where where the introducer will say, but Craig is most proud of the fact that he has two wonderful kids and just one wonderful wife. Right? We'll see if they laugh, and we'll see what we get from that. And then you can gauge the energy. So not matching the audience is an issue, but if you get there early and you feel the energy, you can match where the energy is, and then you can move them to where you want them to go. So any thoughts on that? And this is any solutions that you have for that. Feel free to hit star 2 and raise your hand. All right, let me go to Toronto. Who is this?
Hey, Craig, it's Tim Barnaby here.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good. What are your thoughts on this, Tim?
So just wondering about what you were mentioning there at the end for your keynote. So in the sense of you're sitting in your audience and you're listening or you're taking it all in and trying to get the vibe, you know, trying to see if they are in a good mood or if they're subdued, whatnot. Like, do you have different openings that you would use, or do you just have the same opening, you just approach it differently? Like the story with the letter, do you just have an excited version of that, or do you, and a subdued version, or do you have a totally separate story that you would use that, you know, takes it from one level to the next?
Yeah, I've done both approaches. Sometimes I'll have a story that I'll use if I know it's going to be a real energetic audience. Let's say I'm talking to multi-level marketers or something like that, people who are already pumped up and fired up. I might know that I'm going to come out with a different story. But most of the time nowadays, Tim, it's just I'll still come out with the story about the letter, but I'll just come out with different energy levels. You know, I might come out really laid back when I start the story, or I might come out a little bit more fired up when I start the story. Or there are times when I know an audience is really fired up. At least in my mind, I feel like I'm more able to take a risk, and I might open up with a callback to something that happened earlier in the event. So these are just all theatrical choices. I love opening my speeches with a callback if I can, if I think it's going to be humorous or I think it's going to help me connect. But sometimes in those laid back audiences where you know they're just waiting to go home or they're waiting for something, I usually come out with something more tried and true.
Yeah.
So that's a really good question. Yeah. Thank you, Tim. Okay. Good. Okay, let's move on to the next piece, which is mistake number 7. And this is something that I don't think people have given much thought to. But it rocked my world when I figured this out. And this is it. The mistake is always being dynamic. Yeah, it's always being dynamic. If you're always dynamic with these ups and downs and these backs and forths and these big changes in contrast and so forth. If you're always dynamic, you're no longer dynamic. I want you to really think about the Rocky movies, and I think I might even have brought this up before. But if you think about the Rocky movies, you think about how the soft scenes when he's just sitting there with Adrian are just as captivating as the fight scene. But it's a different energy. You know, but it sometimes, so what I'm saying here is sometimes you can just take off all the spice and just give a story or say something and it'll be much more impactful. And here's an example. Here's an example, again, from this past weekend where I kind of just took off all the spice. It'll only take maybe a minute, but I took off all the spice and see if you can feel the impact that it had on this audience. Here we go.
1996, I was an events planner. I used to put on technology expos around the country. And one of my jobs was to set up the stage for the speaker. And every room that I set up, I would lay down the cord, I would move the chairs, I would set up the lectern, I would move more chairs. But it never failed. In every room I went into, I always stood behind the lectern and looked out on an empty audience. And prayed and hoped that one day he'd show up for me. But I had a saying that I would say every single time I stood behind one of those lecterns. And I get emotional because I knew back then that I'd be sharing this now. And the saying I used to say was this: today I move the chairs, tomorrow I move the audience.
You see that? So there was no wild story there. There was no ups and downs. It was just one kind of laid-back story. And then when you do that, that in itself is contrast to the rest of your presentation. And now I can change the energy and get back into something else. All right, but every now and then it pays to just take off all the spice and just deliver something low and slow and let the content do the work for you. So any thoughts on that? Go, feel free to hit star 2 if you have any thoughts on that. Or if you even do that in your speeches as well, feel free to hit star 2. All right, so these are some of the mistakes, and always being dynamic indeed is a mistake. All right, so let me go to Michigan for a thought on that. It's not Michigan. It's Gina from San Diego.
That's all right. That's
Gina,
fine.
Any thoughts?
We'll take Michigan. I think there's a saying I heard years ago from a musician on stage. He said, "What comes from the heart reaches the heart."
Mm.
So I think if it's coming deep from the heart, it doesn't have to be slick or cool. In fact, I gave a keynote recently that was, or I very much prepared for all of it, but the ending was something I put on somewhat in the final hour, and it was a very moving story and very much connected to the audience's purpose, but it was not a well-rehearsed story. And I think that actually worked in my favor because I was just real with them. I just told the audience what I was going, you know, what was happening, and it was ultimately a happy story, but it was a kind of, you know, just be real, and I think the contrast of that with the more funny upbeat parts, I think it made an impression.
I think it does. I mean, again, if you go back to movies and watching movies, if you just have a movie that's funny and hilarious the entire time without any heart spots, you know, any places where it just touches your heart, then you're not going to have that roller coaster ride and be as fulfilled, I don't think. So I agree with you. Sometimes it's also a departure from the rest of your presentation, which might be more well rehearsed and so solid and slick. And I think it makes a big difference. You know what was interesting about that one, Gina, where I was in Los Angeles was, and I told them this later on, that Crown Plaza was one of the places where I actually walked into the empty room. So think about this for a second. I'm actually in the same ballroom 20 years later that I used to stand in front and wish that the audience would show up for me. I'm actually there 20 years later, and the audience is actually there, so it's pretty cool. So when I got the standing ovation at the end of the speech, I did something that I never do, which is while I got the standing ovation, I walked over to the lectern and stood behind it, and I looked down, and that even got people even more, and it touched me too, because it was like, oh my gosh, I have truly come full circle. So people enjoyed that, and that's what they were talking about at the end of the speech. So yes. Thank you, Gina. And what comes from the heart, as Gina said, goes to the heart. All right, very good. So those are seven mistakes and seven solutions. Now, a bonus one would be this, and this is, again, more just theory, but being unnatural is something that I've seen with a lot of speakers. And what I mean by that is you have speakers who are sounding like other speakers. You can't do that. I remember the first time I spoke to National Speakers Association, which was very, very early on in my career, there was a guy who came up to me afterwards and he said, it was good. He said, but you sounded just like Willie Jolly. And I said, oh, really? And I said, I didn't think I sounded like Willie. But again, I had the cassette tape. They gave me a cassette tape. I went home, I listened to it, and indeed, I sounded like Willie. Now, you say, well, why did I sound like Willie? Because Willie's who I used to listen to all the time. And so I didn't try to, but because he was the one I used to listen to all the time, I ended up sounding like him. So it wasn't intentional, and I'm not saying with other speakers that it's very intentional. But I do see a lot of people trying to sound like Anthony Robbins, trying to sound like Zig Ziglar, trying to sound like Les Brown. And you know what? You'll never get across sounding like somebody else. So it's very important for you to sound like you, because if you don't, we're not going to ever hear you. We're always going to hear them. And that's something I learned early in my career as well, because people used to come up to me after my speeches and say things like, you have to sound more like Dr. King. I would say, what? They said, yeah, you got to sound more like Dr. King. And one time somebody said that to me, and he said, I don't want to sound like Dr. King. And he said, never mind. And he got the point. So the point is, you got to speak like you, not like someone else. Now, how do you do that? This is where I agree with my good friend Darren LaCroix on his mantra, stage time, stage time, stage time. I didn't sound like the real me until I had a year and a half of working with the National Seminars Group and giving speeches or giving workshops every day for 8 or 9 hours a day, because that's what gave me enough time on stage to eventually become myself, to become my real me. And the goal for you should be to bring the real you on stage instead of sounding like Jesse Jackson or Zig Ziglar or, in my case, Willie Jolly. The goal should be to become yourself on stage. All right. So as we wrap up, I'll take any questions or any comments that you have. Feel free to hit star 2. Again, every one of these mics, these monthly implementation calls, will just be as long as they need to be. Oh, one last thing before I see some questions here. But one last thing is, one of the biggest mistakes that speakers make is lip syncing with slides. And what I mean by that is if you are using slides, using PowerPoint, using Keynote, whatever, and you're showing slides and you're saying the same thing on stage that your slides are saying, then you are, in my opinion, lip syncing your presentation. You are the Milli Vanilli of public speaking. Right? So it's important, if you're going to have slides, make them real visuals. You know, I know Will Reed is really good at this, but make them real visuals of things that people can see, like photos or graphs or charts. But don't just make them words that you're saying, because, again, you're competing with yourself and you're just lip-syncing your presentation. All right, so I'll take any questions or comments, and it looks like I have one from Skip. Skip, what are your thoughts?
This is really great. Great reinforcement of this stuff we've all heard before from you, and we've learned in the trainings and all. You mentioned early on at the beginning of the call about rehearsal and practice, right, and really getting your presentation down through rehearsal. What do you recommend for how much rehearsal? Is there any rule of thumb or timing that you suggest or recommend?
It depends on how often you're speaking, and it also depends on how long you've been given this material. So, for example, I used to have a rule, which was I need to practice my entire speech at least 3 times before I go up on stage and give it again. But guess what? When I'm speaking every week, I don't need to do that.
Right.
Speaking every week, I don't. So here's the way I like to rehearse. I like to rehearse in pieces and perform in whole. And what I mean by that is, let's say I'm going to do the 4 R's to remarkable results. I'll rehearse 1 R one day. I'll rehearse the other R another day or another time. I'll rehearse another R the next time. I'll rehearse another. And I don't always rehearse it from beginning to end, right? A lot of times I'll rehearse the 3rd R and then I'll rehearse the 4th. Because otherwise, you're going to have one really strong beginning, and the rest of your speech you might not even get around to rehearsing very well. So I like to rehearse in parts, and that way it keeps it fresh for me, because the only time I have it whole, the only time I give it whole is actually on stage in front of that audience. And that's what keeps it fresh for me. And I rehearse my transitions. I think that's very important as well. So
I did.
Say again?
I was just going to say, I created a new keynote for this year, and what I actually did was something similar. I took the parts, you know, there was three or four parts in the opening and the closing, and I actually rehearsed one a week for like 6 weeks. And so I did one segment for a week and got that really down well. Then I added the second one, and then I actually rehearsed each of those segments at my Toastmasters Club each week. So I had a little bit of an audience, got some feedback, and built it. And then right before the keynote, the week of the keynote, I presented it in front of an audience of 10 of my Toastmasters colleagues and did the whole thing over lunch one day. And that was my dress rehearsal sort of before the final thing. And it came off really well.
Great. And what I would also suggest, and this is just – maybe it's just me, but I always like to have – like I actually rehearse as if I'm giving the speech to a real live audience. But my rehearsals are – on my own, you know, just in my room or wherever I am. But I also suggest doing at least one mental rehearsal where you close your eyes and you picture your audience and you go through your entire speech. And that, for me, lets me be there before I get there, so to speak.
Yep.
And so I always like to do that. But I can't give you a strong rule on practice 3 times or 5 times or 8 times.
Right.
It depends on where you are with your speech and with your content. One thing I realize nowadays is if I'm speaking very often, I might practice the entire thing, not together, but, you know, one part here, one part there, one part, maybe just once in between my engagements, because I want it to still be fresh for me and be good for me.
Yep.
So,
great. Thanks.
There you go. Thank you, Skip. Okay. I've got one from Rebecca. Rebecca, what are your thoughts?
Mike, I went recently to a contest, and there was one speaker who was very well rehearsed. He had everything planned out, knew exactly where to be on stage, knew how to get laughs. The second speaker, she was vulnerable. She was authentic. Her story was about fear and how she was afraid of being up on stage. In fact, her speech title was, "I'm Friends with a Monster," or I was friends with a monster. And it was all about the fear inside of her, about what it was telling her what she couldn't do, and then another side seeing what she could do. But it was so vulnerable and so authentic that she won. And
yes.
It just felt like, compared to the other one that was so well rehearsed, it just felt like his didn't seem to come across as authentic.
Yes. And I've actually worked with some speakers recently, and they were just way too technique-oriented. You could tell that they knew this gesture was going to come there and this way. And I see, got to be more natural than that. So I look at rehearsal as you rehearse so much so that you can abandon what you've rehearsed. You rehearse so much so that you can make it a dialogue with your audience, like we talked about before, so that when they speak to you and yell out and say things and laugh, you can take advantage of those spontaneous moments and really be with them and be like a jazz musician and just kind of play off of them. And so a lot of that is your mindset. But if you go in with, well, I'm going to rehearse just so I can give it this exact way, then you're going to fail the way I did when I failed and went home and watched the speech later on and realized that I was given a monologue. And I think that's probably what you saw. You probably saw a pretty good, well-rehearsed monologue. And then the second person was just real and authentic. Heart beats technique anytime. I'll just say that again. Heart beats technique anytime. So hopefully you're learning all these skills and all of these tools, but none of them will work without heart. And I think vulnerability is a big part of that. So thank you for that, Rebecca. All right. And let me go to Will. Will?
Yeah, Craig. For the last year now, every week I've had the privilege to be on a live television broadcast as a weekly commentator.
Right.
But that's only broadcast to to Yamanashi Prefecture, where I live now. But starting next month, I've been given invitation to NHK, which is like the BBC of Japan, to be on a live broadcast nationwide, and not every week, but on a somewhat regular basis. So my question is, how do you engage with an unseen audience, such as radio listeners or on television viewers?
See, to me, and this is something I learned also, is whether I'm on a teleseminar, whether I'm on a radio show, whether I'm on a television show, I can still speak to one and look to all.
Oh, okay.
Yep, but now I'm just looking into the camera as to all. But I wouldn't get up there and say, to all of you all who are watching me and to this and that. No, you make the you make the connection in the same way by saying, now, you might be thinking this or you might be thinking that, but I want you to consider this. And it's, you're talking to you, singular. Speak to one, look to all, whether it's – and obviously when you're on the radio, you can't look to anybody, but I'm still speaking – as if grammatically I'm speaking to one person. You know, it's like, Will, I'm reading a book, and the book will say something like, for all of you who are reading this. I'm like, there's only one me. There's only me reading this. How can it be all of me who are reading this? So it's speak to one in writing. You can speak to one on radio. You can speak to one on television. You can definitely speak to one on stage.
Well, at one point, Craig, because they sometimes bring the camera right up in your face, and I would tell myself just to get comfortable with the camera that I was speaking to my sister who lives in Michigan, and I knew she'd be watching. And then just out of curiosity, I asked the producer, how many people are watching this? And they told me it was broadcast to 100 million people. So I just changed my self-dialogue, and I now have 100 million sisters.
And you can still, again, this is the inner game of public speaking, but you can still feel like you're just speaking to your sister, because when you speak to one, you'll speak to all.
Yeah.
Speak to one, you'll speak to all. Very good. And congratulations, Will. I can't even keep up with all that you're doing, but congratulations. Fantastic.
Thanks,
I'm trying to keep up.
Yeah.
All right.
Reverse back.
All right, let me go to Ontario, and then I'm going to go to Boise, because I haven't talked to Boise yet. Okay. Who is this again in Ontario? Who's this in Toronto? Okay, but let me go to Boise. All right. Who's in Boise?
This is Dwight.
Oh, yeah. How did I miss that? Okay.
I think I'm the only one you know in Boise, right?
Probably are. It's good to see the other thing. So what
yeah,
thoughts,
great
Dwight?
To see you. No, I my apologies. I actually ended up getting on this call late because I was coming out of another meeting, and I missed the first three. And I don't want you to explain each of them because everyone heard it already. But could you just tell me what the first three were?
Sure. And then, of course, you can get the audio afterwards. I'll post it.
Yes.
That. But the first one the first mistake was giving a monologue. A monologue. And we talked about ways to – and this is a good review for everybody. We talked about ways to make it a dialogue rather than a monologue. Because Bill Gove, the first president of the National Speakers Association, said speaking is not a monologue, it's a dialogue. So we found ways to make sure that we made it a dialogue. Number two, the mistake was preaching. And we looked at ways to make sure that you're not preaching, using the soft you instead of the hard you, letting your stories provide people with the message rather than having to browbeat people with a message. And we got some thoughts from Gina and also from Will on that as well. And then the third mistake was moving without a purpose. And I played a story and I told about how when I'm on this airplane, I need to know exactly where the other character is so I can look at him.
Oh, I did catch that. Okay.
Right, and that other character needs to look back at me and so forth. So that was the third one. The fourth mistake was stepping on thoughts and laughs. The fifth mistake was speaking to the entire group. And the sixth mistake was not matching the audience. And the seventh mistake was always being dynamic. And the bonus mistake was being unnatural, trying to sound like somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And you gave a second bonus, lip syncing, right?
Yeah. I'm full of bonuses. But, yeah, lip syncing, and that's just something, because I remember, and I'll close with this in a minute, but I do remember that I was working with a biotech company, and the CFO, when he first contacted me, said, well, we already have our speech, we just need to know what we're going to say. And I immediately understood what he meant was we already have our slides, we just wanted to know what we're going to say in between them. And I realized this, and this is for anybody who uses slides, understand this. It's about sequence. Always develop your message before you develop your slides. Always develop your message before you develop your slides, because then you'll see whether or not you even need slides to make a certain point or to make a certain message. So thank you, Dwight, for giving us our review. that was very helpful.
Thank you. And also, I think on that number one, you've taught me in the past, and I hope I get this right, when you said make it a dialogue, I think you said something like too much monologue is narration and too much dialogue is
this is actually between dialogue and narration. It's a little bit different, but if it's too much narration, which is just retelling a story, too much narration is a CNN report or any kind of report. Nothing wrong with CNN, but any kind of news report. And too much dialogue is a stage play.
A
good mix of narration and dialogue. And you can always go back to the first mic, monthly implementation call that we did, and listen to five ways to use dialogue, and you'll get more about dialogue out of that. So thank you, Dwight. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Gina. Thank you for everybody who – Skip, thank you for everybody who spoke up today. And we're going to close. And before I do, again, I'll just say this. Hopefully you have this in your mind. But, today I move the chairs. Tomorrow I move the audience. This is something that I had to see it before I could become it. And I always truly believe if you can view it, you can do it. So if you continue to see yourself speaking, continue to see yourself changing lives, continue to see your audience smiling and laughing, maybe tearing up at times, then I truly believe that that's what you'll do the next time you get up on stage. So hopefully these ideas have been helpful to you, and hopefully you've been moved somewhat today. I'll see you in the Facebook group, and if not, I'll see you on next month's mic. Until then, keep speaking up. See you soon.